Blog Talk Radio.
Steve Canine Kim from a scorching hot Los Angeles. Yes, the heat is on like Don Fry. And joining me from the Bay Area, where he's left his heart, Golden Gate Gabe Montoya. We are now right in the thick of fall, and the boxing beat goes on. Mr. Montoya, good Monday to you.
It's the thick of fall for everybody else, but like for us, it seems like summer, man. It's really hot up here, and it's really hot down there. I don't know if climate change is a thing, but it's hot, dude. A lot of fights to talk about last weekend. Kind of grim heading into this weekend, but, you know, we could take a break after the action-packed week, the weeks that preceded us. So happy Monday, Steve. Let's do this thing.
Yes, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet, at SteveUCNLive, and at Gabriel_Montoya. And, folks, if you weren't able to get in last week and chime in about the Canelo-Golovkin fight, the replay was this past weekend. Me and Gabriel will address it once again after viewing the replay. If you want to get your thoughts in on that fight, you're absolutely more than welcome to. We're here for at least 90 minutes, going all the way up to 9 p.m. Eastern time on the next round. But let's get started with round number one on HBO from the Forum in Inglewood, California, for the WBA lightweight title of the world. Jorge Linares narrowly retains his title with a split decision in 12 rounds over Luke Campbell, 115-112, 114-113, and the third judge had it 115-113 for Uncle Luke. Gabe, being there ringside early on, it felt like a dominant performance from Linares, who cut and knocked down their British challenger earlier. But honestly, as you got to the mid to late rounds, it was awfully quiet in that place, except for a small throng of Campbell supporters. I thought the fight really tightened up, and Linares was actually forced to win a round or two to seal the victory and to retain his belt, and you take away that second-round knockdown, this fight is a dead-even draw. I thought Campbell put up a very respectable performance. I thought he made life very, very difficult for the Venezuelan stylist.
In some ways, you could look at this as like Vasyl Lomachenko against Salido, in that the wily veteran is giving him what for. It cuts him, puts him down, seems to be dominating. It was just like you're looking at it going, the kid doesn't even have 20 fights. This almost isn't fair to do to him. And then you watch him mature throughout the fight, find his range, all that that amateur success starts coming to fruition. And we just saw real heart and depth. It's a guy, it turns out, had just lost his father just weeks ago or during camp and had to keep quiet about it. So it's just tremendous to know that he went through this. And, yeah, I thought, Steve, I thought it was a really tight fight. And halfway through, I was like, wait a minute. This is, you know, yeah. Linares isn't exactly falling apart, but this guy's fighting his way back into the fight. It's really something to see him not throw so many combinations.
Tall, lanky, long, and the ability to control distance. I have never seen Linares, who at times has impeccable form. I mean, he does it the way you try to shadow box in the gym. But on this night, he was made to reach, to lunge, and you're right, he was not able to let his hands go with those exquisite combinations because Campbell made it very difficult, and he certainly showed that he had an amateur pedigree and a very high professional boxing IQ. And I said this to Eddie Hearn afterwards in the bowels of the Forum, that if this fight was in the UK, let's say Manchester or in the backyard of Campbell, it's probably a 7-5 fight for the British challenger. And this is where home canvas advantage and being the house fighter absolutely matters. But this was a high-stakes chess match where it was really fought on a very, very cerebral level. I wouldn't say it's one of the all-time great fights, but if you enjoy tactical battles, guys moving tit for tat with each other and really thinking three steps ahead to try to land leather on each other. This was your type of fight. And now the question is, where does Linares go? I mean, Gabe, I asked Oscar De La Hoya, who came over to Press Row after the fight, and I said, so do you make the Mikey Garcia fight now? And he said, well, we're going to start from scratch and look at our options, and, you know, he might even may want to move up to 140. That drove me nuts. Let me just say one thing, Gabe. There are plenty of fights, good ones, at 135. The lightweight class is loaded. It is stacked deep with quality belt holders and really good challengers. And let's be honest, Jorge Linares at 140 with his lack of punch resistance in the past, that may be a terrible move for him. If you want to say that you're the best promoter in the world and doing what's right for the fans, you've got to make Linares Garcia sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and I mean, is that code that he's having trouble making weight, and that's why he faded in the fight or wasn't as energetic in the fight? I think I thought it was Luke Campbell that caused those problems. I'm not that close to his camp. For Oscar to say that, I mean, you know, there's being a promoter and then there's just kind of avoiding a fight. I mean, even Linares says that's the fight he wants, is Mikey Garcia. He tweeted, you know, can we please do it in December so I can eat some tamales for Christmas, which I think we all can understand. Let's get this going. Maybe it doesn't have to be next, but maybe start promoting towards that fight. You know, a joint card and then go forward.
For all the people that say the Linares-Campbell fight is proof that Mikey Garcia would absolutely mash up and destroy Linares, I completely disagree, because Luke Campbell is a style that is in complete contrast at the opposite end of the spectrum of what Mikey Garcia does. Now, I'll go on the record. I thought Mikey Garcia, before the Luke Campbell fight, was a favorite over Linares based on punching power, pure heavy-handedness, and durability. But with that said, Mikey Garcia's style lends itself to being a much better fight and for Linares to be able to let go of his hands in a much more rhythmic fashion than what was allowed this past weekend. But again, I think Luke Campbell, this is the type of fight where he's certainly not the guy that lost to Mendy early in his career, but this is a loss that one day that you'll look at and say, you know what, that's the day and night that Luke Campbell really grew up as a professional fighter. And, Gabe, there was no co-feature on this card. There were only five fights in general on this bill from top to bottom, and some other fights dropped off this Golden Boy card. But, Gabe, I think Antonio Orozco needs to really contemplate a new line of work. This is the second time in less than 10 months that he has not made the 140-pound limit. Now, his fight with Roberto Ortiz was scheduled for 140, and he was right in line for a title shot. Gabe, back in April, he fought Keandre Gibson. He made 140. For Roberto Ortiz, my understanding is, from talking to people, is that he just simply didn't want to do it, didn't even show up to the weigh-in. And here's the harsh truth for Antonio Orozco with his size and build. He's only effective at 140. And Terrence Crawford did the whole division a favor by deciding to move up in weight and vacate all the belts. If I'm Antonio Orozco, I really got to think to myself, am I cut out for this?
I mean, maybe it's, you know, the type of fighter that he is, it doesn't seem like it's the punches that bother him, but maybe it's the training. Maybe it's just simply the process of making weight, which is, you know, pretty horrific for some people. It's pretty barbaric for most. Maybe that's the problem. I'm not sure, you know, but you're right. The ring is no place to be if your heart is not in it and your mind's not in it and your training habits are not in it. So, you know, you guys got an early night. It's kind of a bummer. But, you know, like you said in your column today, HBO dates are hard to come by. And
yep,
opportunities like that that you just pass by, they don't always come back.
As Jimmy Johnson used to tell his players at the University of Miami after particularly bad practices or when they were getting in trouble and he was getting calls from the administration saying, why are your players acting up? He used to tell them, guys, your scholarships are not guaranteed. You don't have to be here the next semester. I don't have to renew your grant in aids or your Pell grants. And a guy like Orozco is not a blue-chip boxer. He's a solid guy. He's a workman. And he's had to work his way back to HBO after beating Humberto Soto. Now, last year, when he was scheduled to fight Fidel Maldonado on HBO Latino, he went to the emergency room because he was dehydrated. For the fight with Keandre Gibson, his manager, Frank Espinoza, got him a nutritionist, a meal prep program, and a strength and conditioning coach. Made 140 just fine. He looked dominant in blowing out Gibson. Exact same things were provided to him for this fight, as he's one step away from a title shot, which he's worked 7-8 years for in his professional career, and to just punt it away when you're Antonio Orozco and not one of the golden childs of the sport like Canelo. I hate to tell you this, that scholarship will not be renewed. And what made it worse, according to my sources, they actually tried to work out a catch weight above 140, and Orozco refused that also. I just think a terrible look for Orozco and his trainer, Carlos Barragán, who's in charge of that career, day in, day out at the House of Boxing in San Diego. Moving along on the next round, Friday night on ESPN News, ESPN2, ESPN3, and the Ocho, and eventually ESPN, we had boxing from Tucson, Arizona, and we'll talk about this more later, but a very entertaining doubleheader featuring a pair of top-ranked champions with WBO belts. Your featherweight champion, Oscar Valdez, got everything he can handle from the tough game Filipino Genesis Cervana, winning a 12-round decision, but they both traded knockdowns, and it was another rough fight for Mr. Valdez. And WBO super middleweight champion Gilberto Zurdo Ramirez grinds a 12-round decision over the game courageous Jesse Hart, who rallied late. Gabe, you know me. I've been a big fan of Valdez from the very beginning, but he's 23-0 now, and he's 26 years old. Coming off the Mariaga fight, I'm seeing some alarming things. He's like that pitcher who has great stuff. He could throw 98 miles per hour, but that's all he has is a fastball. He has no changeup, has no breaking stuff, can't spot the ball. And eventually, at the highest levels, you will get timed. And I'm seeing a certain one-dimensional manner to his game. He does not have a lot of rounds. I'm getting the sense that unless he can evolve, much the way a Marco Antonio Barrera did post-Junior Jones, this is going to be a fun career, may not be a long one.
No, he needed to tighten that punching frame. And it was, you know, it was interesting. After his knockdown, that's exactly what he did. He, all of a sudden, his guard, everything was nice and tight. His arms were tucked into his ribs. He was shooting the jab, and really straight and up and down, and was really, like, minding his defense. He has defensive lapses in there to go with holes in his game. He throws his punches real wide, and like you said, he throws them real hard, so you can see the flex. You can see him throw with everything. And if you can make him miss, luckily he had an action guy in Genesis Cervana who was fine standing in front of him at times and trying to make him miss and make him pay. But somebody with more power, that kid looks like a knockout waiting to happen, to be honest. Putting a lot of unnecessary miles on him. Hasn't really learned how to stick and move and just like take a little heat off the jab, but also keep it nice and straight. And that knockdown was a result of getting cocky and walking away from the guy with your hands down, and he catches a right hand and gets put down. And then I thought it was the first time in his career he'd been down. He looked like he was in denial or shock and kind of got up a little quick. His legs seemed fine, but none of this looks good. I mean, I think he really needs to spend the next few training camps, everything in between, working on being defensively sound and bringing those punches back to his chin, because he's going to get knocked out in a talent-rich division like this.
Yeah, and he's a little bit greedy offensively. He needs to shorten up those combinations. Mm-hmm. Not everything needs to be a 10-punch salvo. It's that old saying, less is more, and he should concentrate on really making more of his punches count. I know he does a lot of those mitt combinations in the gym because I've seen it firsthand. Now, I like Manuel Robles. He's done an excellent job of guiding a lot of young fighters, and he's certainly a name brand trainer now. But if Manuel Robles is honest with himself, and in speaking to the brass at Top Rank and his management, Frank Espinoza, I know they agree with me. It's one of those fights that if you're Manny Robles, you tell Oscar Valdez very bluntly, Oscar, that fight was great for the fans, terrible for us. Let's do some film study. Let's really break this down. Winning is the worst camouflage of all because it hides a lot of things, and it's a deodorant. And sometimes deficiencies go unchecked. And I agree with you, Gabe. The one thing that Valdez really needs to work at is being able to work behind the jab and creating easy rounds where he can be in cruise control or instead of the fast lane for 36 minutes. At the upper levels of boxing, as he rises above the level he's been fighting at, I just wonder if he has enough layers for the Carl Framptons of the world, the Leo Santa Cruzes, even the Abner Marezes. I need to see a little bit more of a three-dimensional fighter here. And, Gabe, do you get the sense Gilberto Ramirez read the press clippings, may have been on social media, and he said to himself, God, even Mexican fans kind of find me boring and monotonous, so I'm going to change that perception of me because I really enjoyed what he did. He made a stated effort to say, you know what, I'm going to stick my nose into the pile and I'm going to get in there and I'm going to quote-unquote be your stereotypical Mexican grinder. I enjoyed this fight. I want to see more of this from Gilberto Ramirez.
I enjoyed the fight a lot. It was like a slight adjustment, but it was like a mental adjustment. He still kept his technique, didn't get hit with a lot of stupid stuff. But, yeah, he closed the distance, cut off the ring well, and just kept digging to the body, kept the combinations going, but was judicious in his punches while being aggressive. It was probably my favorite performance of his. And Jesse Hart, who I was leaning towards heading into the fight, early on looked pretty shaky, kind of nervous. But really settled into the fight after the knockdowns and after they wiped up the corners and they weren't so slippery. It was a tough, close fight, but I didn't feel that there was any doubt that Ramirez won it. I thought Hart did better down the stretch. It's hard to land, but that was because Ramirez, came out fast in the fight and I think tired a little bit down the stretch. But the kid's good, man. He just doesn't have that finishing kick, though. But maybe that's Hart's quality.
Gabe, the greatest compliment I could give this card that was put forth by Top Rank on Friday night is that certainly we all want to see Valdez and Ramirez again, but I also want to see Cervenia and Hart again. And when you could say that, that's when you know you've had a very good broadcast. And by the way, I want to say this one more time, public service announcement from the Kimster. I tweeted it on Friday, yet I still get the bitching and moaning from the fans as it happens. When DVRing a card on ESPN, whether it's Golden Boy or Top Rank, always check to see on your channel guide is if there's another live sporting event that takes place before it. So with that in mind, not only tape the scheduled boxing, but also put the DVR on extended recording or just flat out record the next 2 hours. That will be your insurance. That's your Allstate plan to make sure – or – also, during that spell, tape ESPN News or download the ESPN app. Done with the service announcement. Gabe, big news from Danny Jacobs. People are wondering, what's the next PBC Showtime card he's on? Well, it turns out he had a little trick up his sleeve. It was pulled out of the rabbit, and it was announced on Saturday night on HBO. He has signed a deal with Matchroom Sports, led by Sir Eddie Hearn, and a multi-fight deal with HBO that is set to begin November 11th. The reported opponent is Louis Cuba Arias, a fight I actually like. It'll take place someplace on the East Coast. Gabe, your thoughts on this new marriage?
I'm so happy for him. Finally, he has a promoter that's going to promote him. Somebody that actually he's got paper with that's actually his promoter. No disrespect to Lou, who's worked with him, but there didn't seem to be a plan, and it didn't seem to be a real promotional deal. Al Haymon was kind of deciding, and with that many fighters, Danny was dying on the vine. There's something that happens. I don't know if you experienced this. I've heard about this because I'm actually 27 years old, but I heard when people turn 30 that they start to really see their mortality and kind of see the end of the road, particularly for athletes. And I think that's what happened with Danny, that he knew whether he could say it publicly or not, that he couldn't wait around and do one fight a year, two fight a year, not know where the career's going. And he showed everybody that he belongs at that top level, particularly with Golovkin's next fight. I felt that Danny deserved a draw more than Canelo did. And I think, you know, now to go with HBO and to go in that talent pool where the 60s are and the ones that are available to them, it just makes absolute sense. And I don't know, you know, UK guys don't seem to like Eddie Hearn. Dude seems to promote very well on both sides of the pond, you know, some big events and some solid fights, solid cards. I don't understand why the derision for Eddie. Maybe it's the vests, but I think it's a great marriage. I think Eddie's going to do a great job with him.
I spoke to Eddie Hearn and both Peter Nelson at length on Saturday night at the Forum, and they both made it clear Danny Jacobs will be showcased in the U.S. As it relates to other Matchroom Sports clients, you know, they're not saying it's a multifaceted, all-inclusive deal, but if you look at the upcoming schedule, so now it's today that Dimitri Bivol will be on a Matchroom Sports show in Monaco that will be televised by HBO November 21st. Okay, now, my understanding is that Bivol is really going to be represented in the U.S. by Main Events, but again, it is still an Eddie Hearn-promoted card. Then you have the unification at bantamweight between Zakayanov and Ryan Burnett, October 21st, that will be part of the Boxing After Dark card, which comes from Verona. So the Bivol fight, excuse me, will now be November 4th, just to make that clear. And I think this is a long play. The long play is that certain heavyweight that has the IBF belt that sells 70, 80, 90,000 tickets fighting anybody by the name of Anthony Joshua. This is a very strategic move, in my view, by HBO and Peter Nelson. But as it relates to Danny Jacobs, Gabe, I really believe this. Coming off the momentum of the Golovkin performance, that he was willing to be patient. Listen, he wasn't going to come back 3 months after the fight. I think he was more than happy moving forward with one more fight in 2017 as long as there was a big-picture plan. He's like that guy that gets on the road and he map-quests his destination. And all of a sudden, he sees the 405, and it's a parking lot. It's just one sig alert for 3 hours. But then MapQuest says there's an alternate route. It'll get you there an hour and a half faster, and he pulled off to another route, okay? Take this for what it's worth. I have spoken to multiple sources who I trust. Al Haymon knew nothing of this deal till it was signed. I find that very interesting, Doug. Gabe,
yeah,
what do you make of that?
Like I said, the guy turns 30 and he realizes, you know, this isn't the career that I'd hoped for. And I probably got, you know, a few years left, 6 years left, you know, and I've had the biggest fight of my career and no one's getting back to me about where my career is going after this. So that's very interesting. To me, that was the big question is, you know, is Al still his advisor? I guess not. Or maybe, you know, or maybe.
Well, I wouldn't say that though. I think he's still the advisor. But anyone that says that he had a hand in making this deal, they're not correct. And I don't see how, as an advisor, within good conscience, that Al Haymon could say, I don't want you to take this deal. Think about it, Gabe. With the network contracts of the PBC basically coming to a conclusion this year, I think Fox is the next one. They have one more show left. CBS
right.
does one show a year. NBC is gone. ESPN's gone to Bolivian. I've heard Bounce is even gone. There's a lot of vehicles trying to get on a two-lane highway with the PBC. And look, when is Errol Spence fighting again, Gabe? Do you have any clue?
Yeah.
I'm being dead serious
no
about
idea.
This.
No idea. You know, and he's, and that guy, huge victory, where, you know, this big momentum. It's amazing that you know, and I hate to get into the different clans and tribes that are all in boxing, but the lack of consistency in looking at this. If this was Bob Arum, everybody would be screaming about how he's ruining his career. He doesn't know how to market black fighters. But Errol Spence, you know, the premier welterweight in the world, and arguably like the blue chip possible next pay-per-view star, I think even more so than a Terrence Crawford. And where's the vision? Where's the plan? Where's the next fight? Where are the people saying Al Haymon is you know bad for boxing on that side? Silence.
And moving along here before we get to the Twitter timeline, and I do see the president lined up ready to go. Gabe, last week, and I guess in a somewhat surprising announcement, Andre Ward announced his retirement at age 33. His record finishes at 32-0, 16 knockouts, June 17th. He defeated Sergey Kovalev in their rematch. How will you remember SOG if it truly is the end, Gabe?
Wow, what? That's how HBO released this clip this weekend, a draw in the desert, and I was like, that can't be about Andre Ward's retirement, because it said a draw in the desert, you know? He didn't draw anywhere. Thank you. A lot of people have been talking about his greatness, or first ballot Hall of Famer. Dave and I had a long conversation about it today, and I tend to agree with him, and some of the stuff that you've sent me and that I've read online. I think it's a very well-crafted career. He did it his way, but you look at all the victories, the big ones. The Super Six, as one Showtime executive told me, was designed to make an American star. And they told me that during one of the Super Six fights. And I think that was either going to be Ward or Durrell. It ended up being Ward. And then the head of Showtime moved to HBO, brought Ward with him, tried to make him a star. And it just never really happened. And I think that's on Ward. His personality, his fights were kind of stale. You know, whether you agree or disagree with him being a gentleman or a good guy, there's no, as you always say, fighters, great fighters, give us moments, give us memories. And if you saw one Ward fight, you kind of saw them all. And that's how I think of him. And I can't think of him without thinking of him trying desperately at the end of Dan Goosen's life, or, the last portion of his life, like several times trying to sue him in different states to get out of his contract. A guy that made it so that Ward fought all his fights in the Super Six here in the States. Never had to give up an inch to anybody. And for his troubles, he gets sued and then dumped. Ward goes with Roc Nation. That kind of disloyalty to Dan is something I can't disentangle from Ward's career.
I will think of him as a really good a great tactician who knew how to win fights. I don't look at him as an all-time great. Now, I do think he is certainly a Hall of Famer. And I don't know it because that 2022 class, I believe, is absolutely loaded. So there's going to be some great fighters who otherwise would have got in as no-brainers who may have to wait a year or two. The one thing that I object to, and a lot of the media members are playing the access game, is when they try to couch it that he was like Kurt Flood, this freedom fighter for boxers fighting for their rights. Folks, the truth of the matter is, and this is a fact, it's not an opinion, in all three attempts to extricate himself from Dan Goosen, he was summarily rejected. He had no claim. And in fact, to go to Roc Nation, he had to buy out or do a settlement with Dan Goosen's widow. So when they try to couch him as some sort of heroic figure that did it for the rights of all boxers, I certainly don't think that's true. And let us not forget, for as good as he was in winning the Super Six and defeating Carl Froch is something that has to be respected, the majority of observers believed he lost to Sergey Kovalev. I don't understand this with a lot of the Ward fans. They always talk about, like, the rematch without the first fight. But I don't see Muhammad Ali fans trying to take away the first Ali-Frazier result. It all counts. It's all part of your history. I'm not going to miss Andre Ward as a fighter. I know some people are. They revere him, which is certainly their case. But let it be said, he had a very, very good career, and I do believe he certainly deserves induction to Canastota and the International Box of Hall of Fame, but I reserve the right not to worship him. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598, and we start off with the president, Andrew V. Kennedy. With two top-level PBC guys, and the other one being Carl Frampton, who signed with Frank Warren over the weekend, Gabe, in a new direction, what does it mean for the future, in your opinion? Is this more Al's doing or the fighters doing? Gabe, I don't think there's any doubt that Frampton and Jacobs I think they broke away from the cult. They got away from Jonestown. I think they stopped drinking the Kool-Aid. I think this is really about them making a tough decision.
I think so. I think Frampton, you know, he left something on the table, I think. I think he left the franchise on the table by signing with Al, coming over here almost getting beaten, and then eventually getting beaten. I don't see why there isn't more criticism and why people aren't calling it out more. Clearly, they got away from that clan.
You know what I think the last straw was? Do you remember when Santa Cruz basically got two home fights, one in New York, one in Las Vegas against Frampton, and there's like this gentleman's agreement that, okay, whatever happens, we'll have a fight in Ireland, and Santa Cruz said, no. I think at that point, Frampton realized, okay, who's representing my side here? And I think that certainly played into his decision. Here's one from Irvin Rodriguez. In your opinion, how soon does Golden Boy make Linares Garcia happen? Also, is Matisse Broner real? No, I'm being told that is not real. But, Gabe, I'm going to say it again. Jorge Linares is a fantastic fighter, but he is still near the end of his career. And as of yet, I don't think he has a defining victory for as good as he is. In fact, he's probably known more for some of his stunning losses. I hope this Garcia fight happened, and I just hope that De La Hoya was giving me promoter speak. Because unless he's fighting a Robert Easter or a Ray Beltran, those are the fights I want to see. I don't want to just see Jorge Linares fight. I want to see certain fights. There's a huge difference.
What is he going to do? Go to 140 and fight Terrence Crawford? I just don't understand that. Why that would sound viable. I mean, maybe it's the promoter speak, like you say, of linking to a dangerous fighter that you have no intention of fighting while you bide time and figure out your next move. The guys fought some top-level fights right in a row. Anthony Crolla, now Luke Campbell. Anthony Crolla twice. You could have a little bit of one for Linares and then the Garcia fight. I don't have a problem with that.
Gabe, I'm going to say it again. It's something that I've stated often recently. Mikey Garcia has to realize in the real world, okay, this is not a utopian society we live in, that if he wants to fight blue-chip boxers from the top-ranked stable or the Golden Boy stable, they are not doing one-offs. He is not Ray Leonard, who could literally pick and choose promoters based on fights and events. And unless he's willing to sign a multi-fight agreement that includes other fights, I don't believe he's going to get these assignments that he wants. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that is the current situation that we live in. Here's a question from Babs. Other than Jacobs, which current fighter could most benefit from this new HBO/Eddie Hearn alliance in your opinion? You know, I got a name, and it's kind of a small name, but I'm saying this is how a guy can benefit from it. I'm being given indications that Superfly 2, the sequel, is absolutely going to happen sometime in late February, Gabe. And one of the 115-pound belt holders is Calify, who is promoted by Hearn. And when I asked Peter Nelson on Saturday night who are some of the names that you think could be involved, he mentioned Calify. That's just one example right there.
I think they struck gold with that, with Superfly. And Bob Arum's done series. I don't see why they shouldn't here. If you had to pick a division to go to that they aren't going to, is there one that you think that's underrepresented at this point?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, the cruiserweights have the tournament. Welterweights are kind of scattered all over, and that's more of a Showtime domain. Middleweight certainly is HBO. I have to think about that. Maybe featherweights. But again, all the featherweights outside of, let's say, Oscar Valdez and Joseph Diaz are with Showtime and PBC. I'd have to actually think about that for a quick second. Here's a question from Loon Leo. What's the ceiling on Luke Campbell? Also, what's the fight you guys are most excited about for the rest of 2017?
I don't have an answer for that just yet. But I would say Luke Campbell. I don't know what his ceiling is, but he certainly showed he belongs. And he befuddled a guy in Linares who most people consider an artist in there. People are so excited to see him box, and the first few rounds it looked like it was going to be another masterpiece, and then it was like, you know, that when that Carl Lewis started singing the national anthem, somebody going, uh-oh, you know, it just looked like he was maybe things were going to fall off, the, you know, the wheels were going to fall off the wagon. So I think let's bring the kid back, and unlike Frampton, he's, you know, he could go back to the UK with even more respect, and then build on this, and you know, more people will come see him. I think Frampton can get well again, but man, he's had to really clean house and rebuild.
Mm-hmm. Here's a comment from Giovanni. I'm a big fan of Oscar Valdez, but if he doesn't change his fighting style, he won't last long. His hands mm-hmm. are down and the chin open, and that's a bad combo. You can do one or the other. You can put your hands down and have your chin tucked, or you can have your chin tucked and your hands down, but you can't do both, and I agree with this sentiment. And here's one from Haymanites, just making clear, isn't the number 347-215-7598? What is it, happy hour out there? Guys, for me, it's always happy hour. Anyway, you know the number. We just said it. We're on for at least another 55 minutes going all the way up to 9 p.m. And again, if you weren't able to join us last week and talk about the Triple G Canelo fight, the replay was this weekend on HBO. Go ahead, give us your thoughts. Gabe, let's get to the phone lines.
All right, 405, you're live on the next round. 405?
Hello. How are you guys doing tonight?
Hello. Yes. Yes.
Santos from Oklahoma.
Santos, Boomer Sooner.
Not much. I'm really disappointed with the Andre Ward retirement. No, I'm just fucking with you. I don't care.
wow. Santos.
I thought it was funny on Twitter. Everybody just going in on him. And yes, some people attacking Steve. Like, respect his skills and stuff. But like you said, Steve, everybody has a preference. If you like a fighter, it's up to you. Like, you don't have to like everybody.
No, I agree. Listen, he's not for everybody, but there are people that really like him. But he did not endear himself. And, Gabe, do you agree or disagree that he timed this announcement out in a kind of curious fashion? He saw the heat and the attention of Canelo Golovkin. Kovalev was having a press conference that same day about his return with Shabransky, and he said, you know what? I want to get in on this. I'm telling you, I think that this was absolutely planned to a T, because what I was told was that on the afternoon of Superfly, September 9th, they were going to actually announce a multi-fight deal with HBO, and something went haywire, and the sense and the feel that I'm getting, it was really a disagreement between Andre Ward and Roc Nation. So, you know, again, I'm not so sure this retirement is permanent.
I don't think it's permanent. I mean, you know, I'm not sure what weight class he comes back at. He's always talked about, he told me 10 years ago, or, you know, he was always wants to fight once at heavyweight. I don't think he's done. I think you're right. You know, it's just kind of Trump the news of the day. He'll take a rest, and then he'll be back. I don't know if absence will make the heart grow fonder. The sex has to be good in order for that to happen. And, you know, seeing the career wasn't quite that.
I think Andre Ward is pulling the Floyd here, like waiting for the landscape at light heavyweight to cool down a little bit, because there's some badass fighters coming up, and a lot of them are going to be mandatory to him. And I think
right,
he's waiting around
think,
for
but,
John Ray to come out.
But Santos, as good as those fighters are, they weren't going to pay all that much. Okay, and again, he believes unless it's a certain type of financial reward, which is worth the risk, maybe he says, you know what, let me lay out for 12 to 18 months, and let's see what's available out there, let's say in the beginning of 2019.
I haven't been on to talk to you guys for a while. Shows have been pretty busy, but I went out to a Superfly card, Steve, and it was my first fight ever, and as soon as I walked into the StubHub, you could just feel the atmosphere of a big fight. And
it was a fun night.
Something cool to go through.
It really was. It was a fun night, and I hope they are able to put together Superfly 2 in late February, and some of the matchups being formulated, such as Sol Rungvisai versus Estrada. I like the direction that they're going. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, and one more thing. With the Danny Jacobs thing signing with HBO, One thing I can't stand is, like, when I go on to social media, like, a lot of people talk shit about HBO trying to keep Danny Jacobs from Canelo and Triple G. If that was the case, they would have just left him at PBC.
Right. I don't even know what to say at this point. If you and then or the other people are going to say, well, Danny Jacobs is ducking Charlo. Has that been stated yet?
Yeah, I heard that one.
Oh, my God. Okay. All right, Santos, as always, thank you for the call, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
530. You're live on the next round.
Good evening, Gabe, Steve. It's Ringside Robert here.
Robert, what's going on?
First of all, I'm going to say this. Andre Ward is a great fighter, but I hope he stays gone. He doesn't do anything to help himself be promoted. And in order for you to be a superstar in this business, in my opinion, you've got to have charisma, you've got to have a personality, you've got to be willing to give interviews, and you can't always try to fight your way out of contracts. If you put your name on the dotted line, you've got to fulfill those agreements. And he spent more of his time paying lawyers to get out of deals than actually concentrating on his sport. That's what I firmly believe. So I hope he stays gone. As far as Mikey Garcia goes, the Linares fight makes sense. And I read an article in the LA Times, I think it was on Friday, Steve, where he was talking about moving up to fight Cotto. He just fought at 140.
I don't know. I agree. And you know, Freddie Roach, I did a story for Boxing Scene where he said, yeah, we'll do Garcia at 154. And I'm like, boy, they're just jumping around like Frogger, that old video game, all over the place.
And I followed boxing for most
Remember
of
Frogger?
Yeah.
Fun game.
Oh, I see you, John Frogger.
I followed boxing for
really?
Most of my life, Steve, and I know moving up in weight, you know, look at Roy Jones. He moved up and fought John Ruiz, won that title, and went back down to light heavyweight and was never the same. You can't abuse your body like that. I hope this is just a way to get his name out there, but he's got a title at 135. He either needs to defend it or give it up.
Yeah, and again, Miguel Cotto currently is with Golden Boy. And
exactly.
Just reference what I said about 5 minutes ago. It's still
applies. I totally agree. And see, no other boxer unless you're Sugar Ray Leonard, can do what Mikey's trying to do. And as far as the PBC thing, I think this is just the beginning of an avalanche. I think we're going to see a whole bunch of fighters all of a sudden find
I don't know.
To go.
We shall see. I don't know. Maybe certain guys are absolutely happy with their situation fighting once or twice a year.
Maybe. But, I'm happy that Carl Frampton and Daniel Jacobs do it. And from what I understand, Arthur Beterbiev is supposed to be on the next ESPN card. So.
Right,
you know,
November 11th.
Yeah.
And let's just put it this way. Top Rank didn't win that purse bid to do a one-off.
No, of course
okay?
not. So, you know what? I hope more and more of these guys understand what's happening in this business and pays attention, because I really hate the way that Premier Boxing Champions does its business with its fighters. You know, I understand that this is a business, but you can't lock up a fighter and throw away the key.
They get one career, so let's just keep that in mind.
Yep.
Robbie,
okay.
As always, thank you for the call, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
281, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, Nate Houston, how you doing?
Nate, welcome
up,
aboard.
Nate?
Yeah, so, of course I went to the Canelo Triple G fight, right? And so then last weekend, last night I watched that replay. Man, I mean, you watched the replay, right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, I did.
So, you know how they were putting the scores up after every round? It just turned into almost a comical thing for me. It's like, geez, no matter what happens in the ground, 10-9 Canelo.
Well, Canelo. Nate, can I just say this? And I expressed this to Gabe about a minute or two before we went on air. That first round, if you gave that to Canelo, that meant right there you were going to make it very difficult for Golovkin to win any round. And
I totally agree.
And Canelo might have won rounds 2 and 3, and then the whole thing that, well, he won the last three, Canelo. If you go back to 10, 11, and 12, there's a lot of people who actually gave Golovkin those rounds. Not all three, but at least one of them.
Yeah.
To me, it's the lazy, convenient narrative to say, well, I gave Canelo the first three and the last three. And I would just say I respectfully disagree. If that's the way you had it, you were never going to give Golovkin that fight.
Yeah.
Well, doesn't Dave
Moretti
have the fight like that, too? He gives Canelo the last three, gives the first two. I have to look at his scorecard again. I think I have it here on my computer. But, you know, it's very clear, that agenda. And I think, you know, while we want to keep the drama of a good and not having open scoring, watching that replay and seeing that kind of public shaming of that of the scorecards, you know, it's a bit of an argument for it.
Yeah, but I mean, listen, I enjoyed the fight the second time around. It was high quality stuff, but in watching it again, there was no doubt in my mind that Golovkin won the fight. Now, does Golovkin still have to make adjustments? Absolutely. And he still needs to work, I believe, on punch placement and punch selection. I thought he missed a lot of shots over the top. The second time around, this is going to be a test of Abel Sanchez, because for the first time since they've come to America, he's really going to have to make some tweaks here moving forward.
Yeah, I think that's right. He does have to do something a little different. So.
Oh, but by the way, Nate, is it true that okay, Gabe, sit down for this. Is it true that Max Kellerman was actually kind of sort of defending Adelaide Bird? Really?
Yeah, he was, said something at one point. I don't remember. What did he say, Gabe?
I think he was doing more what I've seen a lot of the judges do, which was Steve Farhood was on Chris Mannix's podcast, and he actually had it a draw, as did Chris Mannix, which I think is pretty crazy because I trust their eye. Steve Farhood said that the worst thing that a judge can do, or at least the thing that they fear most, is having a score that just way out there on its own. But he also just defended, you know, he didn't so much defend Adelaide Bird, but called Dave Moretti one of the best in the business, which I kind of beg to differ with. I don't know. It just seems like it's a club. And even Max was kind of, I guess, trying to shade for Canelo. I don't remember exactly what he said. I start seeing red, like in Kill Bill, and that siren starts going off every time Max talks. It's just like I see red.
Nate, anything else we could do for you?
Just real quick. I am so excited that somebody finally gave Al the finger. and they have Jacob and Frampton too, I guess. You know, moving away. I'm just like, oh, cool. It's got to be started. And you know, hopefully that goes. And I heard you earlier, Steve, saying that you think Al still really is the advisor, but I just don't see how that can be true.
Yeah, you know, but honestly, Al reminds me of that line from Ray Donovan from a couple of seasons back. He ain't the type of guy you fire.
Yeah. Agreed.
Well, so we'll see after his first fight if he thanks Al Heyman or if he thinks that he earned.
No, very, very good question, yeah. All right, well, listen, Nate, as always, thank you for the call.
All right, have a good evening. Thank you.
Thank you. 347-215-7598. We still have fight review, fight preview, and news and notes upcoming, Gabe.
And, yeah, pulling up the cards, no one gave Golovkin the first two rounds. just, yeah, it was not going to be his night. Let's see, 209 Central Valley. You're live on the next.
How you guys? Hey guys, how you doing? This is Trini.
What's Trini, up, what's going on?
Not much, man. I really enjoyed the fight this weekend. Great Friday and Saturday. And the thing that I enjoyed the most of the Canelo Triple G was Doug Fisher and Beto Duran with Kevin Kelly.
Oh, you got the online version, Trini. Yes, okay.
Oh, yes. It was the first time in another pay-per-view Golden Boy does. I'm going online. The picture was perfect. And just the commentary itself, it was like, you know, it was great. And I was seeing on Twitter everybody complaining about HBO, and I was enjoying it over here.
Hmm.
You know?
Okay.
So,
good to know.
Yeah. And you do an awesome great with Beto Duran, too. So I don't know why Golden Boy don't put you on. So.
There's only so many chairs, Trini. There's only so many chairs.
No, you have to be. You have to be enjoying it, too.
I watched like half of it on on YouTube after the fight, after I'd seen the fight of that broadcast, Trini, and you're right. Like Doug is, and Steve and Beto, they've all, you guys have really relaxed into your jobs, and you bring knowledge of the beat, and there's no agenda. It's just you're calling a fight. It's really refreshing.
Exactly, and then when they're fighting, when there's action, they stop. They start commentating and let us enjoy the brawl that's going out for 2-3 minutes or 1 minute or 30 seconds, and then they jump back in and start commentating again, and that's so nice, you know? So you don't have to keep on hearing it. But I have
Trini,
to
how did you see the Trini, how
Triple
did you
G,
see the Linares-Campbell fight?
That was a good fight. At first, I thought Linares, after he dropped it, I said, oh, it's going to be Linares win, a nice showcase. But I give credit to Campbell. After that fourth round, he started going the middle rounds, and that kid can box and everything, so I want to watch him again.
Yeah, this will be a fight that he grows from, no doubt about it. You could just see the confidence surging in the late rounds from Campbell.
Oh yeah, and he's gonna learn from that fight, and he's gonna make him better, and I hope they put him back on, you know.
So, all right, listen, Trini. Yeah. As always, thank you for the call 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
I'll tell you, after Jacobs Arias, which everybody expects Jacobs to win, he should win. If he doesn't, he doesn't. You know, he doesn't deserve the contract. But I wouldn't mind Lemieux after that. What do you think of that fight?
Yeah.
Is that possible?
No. I mean, let's do fights. Let's mix and match. You know, I don't know what else to really say, but again, Larry Merchant, one of his mantras, fights make fights. And by the way, Lemieux Jacobs in New York, that does business. And we're going to see what Eddie Hearn is all about because, listen, in the UK, boxing is much higher on the totem pole, and he doesn't have to compete with the NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, NHL, collegiate sports. And I talked with him a little bit on Saturday about this dynamic that, hey, it's a little bit different. And he said, Steve, I understand what I'm dealing with here. Because think about it, Gabe. A fight like Campbell Linares in England does about 12,000 people. On Saturday night, they announced 4,000 and change. Gabe, I don't think there was more than 2,500. It's a different market. But with Danny Jacobs, I don't think Eddie Hearn would have signed him unless he felt as though he had a thoroughbred he could ride.
Yeah, there's no question. A guy that he can make fights with. And you look at that, like a Lemieux fight, that's a gateway fight for both guys. You know, Lemieux wants that rematch, wants to be in that mix to get with the Canelo and Golovkin. So does Jacobs. I mean, having them fight each other, that's a matchup that could have a little series going. No, the future's bright. And I love the middleweights. Like after the 47 division, which is my favorite, it's all about the middleweights. Let's head back to the phones. Jake in Rochester, you're live on the next round. Jake?
Hello?
Jake?
Hello?
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 Jake, talk to us, please.
Am I on the air here?
Yes, you are,
you're
Jake.
Totally on the
go.
Air.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't know what was going on for a second.
Sorry.
Hey, guys, what's going on?
What's up, man?
Regarding Oscar Valdez, what you guys were saying is, like, it's true and it's unfortunate. And I was just thinking, like, the way he's so naturally talented, you know, he's very physically strong. He has a lot of stamina. I mean, he's throwing hard shots for 12 rounds. But he's also very – he can pinpoint his shots so well. That lead left hook that he dropped Genesis with was – I mean, if you could throw a huge, sneaky left hook, he did. And, you know, obviously dropped him, and he was badly hurt. But, you know, if he doesn't – yeah, like you said, Steve, develop a changeup. It's going to be a short career, unfortunately, for that kid.
Yeah, and by the way, his management and the top-ranked brass, they realize that. They want to see some tweaks moving forward.
That left hook, though, that was a thing of beauty. It was a little whip of a shot, and you just think, in the way he moves, he's got some angles that not everybody's prepared for. You can see he's a diamond in the rough, but and it's, you know, he's not out of shape ever. But can you make those kind of changes at his age? Is he who he is?
And
anything else, Jake?
Regarding Andre Ward, you guys were kind of looking back upon his career, but also Steve indicated that it may be a short-lived retirement. But I would say, looking back upon his career, I would say he wasn't an all-time great. He was very good. Like Steve said, he was a first ballot Hall of Famer. But, I mean, to me, if he retires right now, he'll always be like a what-if sort of fighter for me because of the long periods of inactivity of him out of the ring and his sudden and abrupt retirement. When in front of him, he had, you know, I don't know, the possibility of even maybe going to cruiserweight and winning a title there, and then where does that put him historically? So, I mean, there, I don't know. I think there's a lot of unfinished business there, and I mean, I don't really like watching him fight that much, but he's a great. I mean, he's a great talent.
I don't think we're going to get long discussions on Andre Ward.
Ward is Ward. He's not our cup of tea. Maybe for other shows they could do wax poetically for three segments at a time. Here it's like, nice knowing you. I'm sorry.
I think people wonder, you know, there's a few layers, I think, to why it sometimes maybe feels personal with Steve and I. But I've talked about one part of it. But, you know, a part that people don't really understand about being a boxing writer, I think Steve's, you know, certainly at a different level now, but like those early days when we're working at Max Boxing, you know, I'm paying for that Vegas trip or that trip to Tachi Palace. I didn't pay for the St. Lucia trip, which was awesome. But
I had a great time on the Cayman Islands for a Ward fight.
You know,
I enjoyed that one.
St. Lucia. Yeah, St. Lucia actually paid for that. But, but I also saw him at – he's like the only fighter I know that made the StubHub Center boring. The Abraham fight was dreary, and those are the memories. Like, you know, you're putting out hundreds of dollars to make a trip, or you know, even just your time, and even if it's your job. I mean, we weren't really getting paid all that. At least I wasn't getting paid like all that much per show for Max Boxing. You remember that shit. The guys that, you know, and I've seen a lot of fights. You know, Margarito Williams, Vasquez Marquez. At the StubHub that are memorable fights, the guys that gave me their souls and a piece of their body. Andre Ward never really did that for me, no matter how far I traveled. I traveled through a rainstorm to go to the Tachi Palace.
Gabe, the greatest regret, and they'll never admit this, and me and you pushed for it. We were told to shut up and stay in our lane. After they won the Super Six, they should have got that last belt against Lucien Boutte, who at the time was undefeated and one of the biggest regional draws in the sport of boxing. And I said it. I don't care if they fight in Montreal. I don't care if they fight in Minneapolis. I don't care if they fight on Mars. Ward was always going to win that fight. That would have been a historic victory for him. You know what? He let it go. He helped rebuild Carl Froch's career, which was ironic.
Who, I don't know if you heard this, did 80,000 when he knocked out George
Jones. Really?
Yeah.
Have they ever mentioned that before? okay.
But, you know, I mean,
anyway,
he didn't win that big, but he needed that win. I agree.
Can I ask you one question, Steve?
Yes.
Okay. During your career as a boxing writer, how long did you have to have a side job before it became like your full-time gig?
Just a couple years. I mean, listen, I do other side jobs now. I mean, I don't have just one gig. I do a lot of different things in boxing. I'm always hustling. You know, that's the reality, and I like it, you know. Anyway, Jake, thank you for the call, 347-215-7598. As they say, ABC, Gabe, always be closing.
Oh, no doubt. You
always.
You taught me how to hustle as a writer, get those other gigs. And, you know, like I was, like I said, I was speaking for myself, you know. I was, like, you know, a junior writer. I wasn't, like, a senior writer till later, and you know, you got to make your bones, and that's what being a writer is all about. But and you remember that shit. You save the receipts. Andre Ward, I traveled to Tachi Palace over the grapevine through a rainstorm for Sugar Proof Buchanan. What was I thinking?
Oh,
and it was a horrible, horrible fight. 347, you're live on the next
trooper.
Round.
You're a trooper.
Hello, that's me?
Yes, it's you.
It is.
Hey, guys. What's going on, guys? Just wanted to kind of touch on a couple different topics. Number one, I noticed none of you guys really talked about the Parker versus Huey fight, Fury fight. I don't know if you guys were able to see it. I know I wasn't really able to see it. I heard it was a little bit sloppy, but Parker won just like I kind of thought. So I think we can all agree that Joshua is probably the number one heavyweight in the division. So who would you guys say is number two to really give him a really good fight?
Deontay Wilder.
I think Parker can beat
him. Parker?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, you know what? I completely disagree because of size, speed, power. All those, and again, I know Wilder might be a little chinny, but say what you want about Wilder. As vulnerable as he is, as loose as he is fundamentally, he's still a tough guy to beat. It's hard to teach his size and power. It's not a lot of guys with that combination still.
Interesting. So
yeah,
okay.
And I only saw a little bit of it. It was a really bad copy, and so I'm waiting until I get a better copy of Fury Parker. But I'm curious, you watched it. What did you think of the two cards that were 118-110 versus Rocky Young's 114-114?
I mean, it was a really wide scorecard. Anytime a scorecard like that is like that wide, you kind of like raise your eyebrows a little bit. Because especially in the beginning, Parker was doing like a really good, not Parker, but Fury was doing like a, I'm not going to say a really good job, but he was doing a pretty decent job of staying away from him, just trying to box him. So to make it 118-110, I thought it was a little bit crazy. I would more say more maybe 116-112, but 118-110 just kind of gave me a Canelo flashback.
A little Adelaide bird dropping. Yeah, I hear you.
A little bit.
I hear you.
So, Kim, my next question is for you, because you say that Ward is not an all-time great, and I know you guys don't really want to talk about him too much, but I'm going to do it anyways. But you said that how Ward is not really an all-time great, but, you know, you've said on multiple occasions on, like, other shows that, what's his name, Floyd Mayweather is. I'm just trying to understand how Floyd is all-time great, but Ward isn't, and I'm asking that because you said that Ward is a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's beaten really great guys like Kovalev, Kessler, Frost, Dawson, Abraham. And when you look at somebody like Floyd, he beat Pacquiao, he was 36. He beat Mosley at 38. He beat Marquez at 34. Alvarez was a little too young at 23. He fought Cotto at 32 when he was falling down. And he beat Oscar at 34 when that was like his second to last fight. So what's the difference?
You know what? You make a good point. And then that would just mean Floyd's not an all-time great. Abraham at 68, I don't think it's a great victory. Kovalev, again, very tainted. Both fights are very tainted in my view. Again, do I think he's one of the best super middleweights of all time? I think he's in that Mount Rushmore. I don't think he's as good as James Toney or Roy Jones. But all-time great, there's very few all-time greats. Keep that
deal,
in mind, Gabe.
If it has sealed the deal with Butte, and you can't, you know, blame him for Stevenson, but, I mean, was that fight even broached before the retirement? Like, he didn't seal the deal for me by taking on all comers. You know, and like I said, like Steve said, the Arn fight, he did go on and win a title. The win, I'd say, gained. But at the time, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, but Abraham looked pretty done, at least at 60. Then he moved up. He was kind of new to 68. Again, it's a good win at Gaines. But Alan Green, Sugar Pooh Buchanan, Chad Dawson coming down for, like, the first time in, like, what, 7 years from 175 to 68. I'm supposed to get excited about that? And all the accomplishments don't make for the X factor, which is excitement. That's what.
Oh, by the way,
everybody is clamoring to see you, and Andre Ward was far from that.
In defense of Floyd, the Floyd that I saw at 130, and I saw these fights live against Gennaro Hernandez and Diego Corrales. Let me tell you something, and I'm going to take some heat from this, and people are going to fall off their chairs as they hear that. That's some of the best boxing punching I've ever seen live. That guy was special at 130. That version of Floyd is better than any version of Andre Ward, in my opinion.
Gotcha.
So that's
now,
what, to me, separates them.
Now, my last question is for both of you guys. Just kind of wanted to, like, I guess I'm kind of going in the direction that the last guy was saying for his last question, like, as far as, like, writing, because I'm a writer, just graduated with a degree in English and media. I do a ton of writing right now. I've written for a few newspapers and a few websites. On one website, I have, like, over 1 million views. So I'm just trying to figure out, like, how do I, like, get in both of your positions? Not really, like, to, like, you know, have my own, like, broadcast show. And I'm not even trying to, like, turn this into, like, my own, like, personal thing. I mean, I guess I kind of am. But I'm just trying to figure out, like, how do I get into, like, you guys' position or, like, position like Dan Raphael, like, just one of those sports writers.
I think being a real – well, could you go, Steve? You're more
– Well, I don't even know what to say. I just work hard. I just grind. There's never been a plan. I just put my head down and work and then look for opportunities and be sincere in what you are doing. I see way too many guys. It's about themselves. It's very self-serving.
Yeah.
And
so
I have no room for that.
So what do I do? Can I, like, email you or something? Like, what do I do?
Well, I wouldn't do that. I worry about my career. I got to be honest. I don't have time to worry about anyone else's. I'm just being blunt with you because I'm just trying to figure this out still to this day.
Yeah.
You
know?
Pitch the editors. Yeah, you pitch the editors of the different websites, and they all say who they are. You know, write your story, send stuff in. Be consistent. You know, there are guys like Steve, we could vouch for this. Over the years, I've only worked for, like, Doghouse Boxing and Max Boxing and for Boxing Scene for a week. Guys will hit you up and want to write for the site. You get them a credential for a big fight, and then magically they disappear because they had their big fight experience, and then they move on. So if you really want to do it, you have to be consistent. Learn all the different types from interviews, fight reports, you know, on site, you know, in the gym, reporting.
So
learn all the flavors.
So, Gabe, can I email you or something? Because I was actually writing for a newspaper where they actually sent me to the Barclays Center to, like, cover the Danny Garcia versus Keith Thurman fight. So I had a little bit of experience with that. But yeah, I mean, everything that you guys are saying are pretty gold. I'm pretty sure there's other people that are listening right now too that are probably, like, in my position that are trying to, like, work their way up. But yeah, I guess I'm just trying to pull in any type of information that I can. I don't care if I have to beg. Like, I really don't. So I'm just trying to figure this out.
All right, well, listen, thank you for the call, and good luck in your endeavors. 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
619. You're live on the next round. 619?
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Morning.
Hello.
Afternoon. Hey, couple things. So I got to start off with something that I've been meaning to say for a while. I haven't called in, or I haven't gotten through when I have called. Insecure. Steve Kim, you're right on the money.
Is that a show or what? Give it to me.
That's a good show. That's a great show. Two seasons in, and I'm hooked.
Can I just tell you something? How bad was Ballers? I think it jumped the shark. Listen, you know me. I'm a big Miami football guy, but Dwayne Johnson, I'm about to cut his scholarship. That season was terrible. Bad, man. Bad.
The continuity. I did not enjoy it. I kind of, it was like the vegetables on my plate. Like, I ate everything, and then I watched that just because it was like.
Hey, vegetables are actually good for you, though. Come on.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Vitamins, minerals, fiber.
The fact
you know.
That the Raiders are actually in Vegas, did that hurt them?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
They're doing this. I mean, it's like they lost their plot this year. It went in 50 different directions, and then lo and behold, they're back to their agency, and I'm like, give me a break.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I was like, did The Rock actually have something to do with the Raiders coming to Vegas? I was like looking it up. I was wondering, maybe this is. So anyway, yeah, Insecure, really good. You just made a comment about Floyd that I have to second because a lot of people focus on the last 5 or 7 years of Floyd's career, and they don't go back to look at Floyd of 130, Floyd of 135.
Agreed.
That Floyd was amazing. So, I mean, that's how he's better than Andre Ward all time because Andre Ward never had a moment where he was like that. You know,
I got to tell you, that performance against Diego Corrales, who granted was weight-drained, okay? I was there the whole thing, me and Doug Fisher. And sick, okay? But the stuff he was doing, the hand speed, the combinations, turning offense into defense and vice versa, I remember me and Doug Fisher were there. And by the way, Doug was a huge Mayweather fan back then. People don't believe me, but trust me. I was there with Doug a lot. We said to ourselves, this must have been what young Ray Leonard was like. Unfortunately, that career veered off in a different way and went sideways. For the benefit of Floyd and not for us, but I'm just telling you, young Floyd, when he was pretty boy, Floyd Mayweather, was a different guy.
Had he continued to fight like that, he would have eventually taken an L, but he would have had a lot more extraordinary career, I think, towards the end. It would have been a lot more exciting.
Well, Jose Luis Castillo altered his career much the way Edwin Rosario did to Hector Camacho.
Yeah. All right, guys. And lastly, when's the drop dead date that we, you know, I'm kind of sitting on pins and needles here waiting for the rematch to be announced by Golden Boy and K2. At what point do I say, okay, the egg timer's gone off, nothing's being announced, we're moving on?
You know, I really don't know because May is so far away, but again, Tom has made it clear. If we're going to get jerked around, Gennady's going to fight in February or March. So I would give it a month or so because even if you wait all the way through the end of October, early November, plenty of time to schedule a fight in mid-February, March, right? You know, so again, let's let this process play out. Tom and Eric Gomez just met Friday, and the track record's been good. They can cut a deal.
Yeah, it has, but it's also been – there's a lot of track record of Canelo – calling you up to the ring and saying, you know, he's going to fight you and then not. So I'm just wondering
Let's give Canelo credit. He did just fight the guy.
No, he did.
Let's keep that in mind. He did just fight him.
But, you know, Danny Jacobs,
all right.
Lemieux, I'm waiting for some of those guys to step in. But anyway, guys, thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much. 347-215-7598. Gabe, real quickly. Yunier Dorticos blows out Dmitry Kudryashov in 2 rounds in a short but explosive fight. Gabe, I love the knockout, but I got to tell you, it was apparent Kudryashov had run out of gas by the middle of the second round. I have never seen a guy look that slow that early in a fight.
Seriously, I was like, did Joaquin Phoenix stab this guy backstage or something? Like, what's going on?
Wow. Viper Room reference
bad.
There. Jeez.
He looked bad. Yeah. Well, I hate to throw shade at a guy, but this was a VADA fight. I love the finish, though. That jab to the heart and then, you know, a shot over the top. It was just... you could just see, like, the button was turned off, and he just falls in a heap. What a way to announce himself, Dorticos. This, all the shade I throw at Dick Schaefer that's well-deserved, this is a hell of a tournament.
It is. I just wish that there was better distribution of the tournament, but I always felt, for as good as it is, for guys like you, me, and our listeners, I did not know if a network would commit to 8 straight weeks of boxing. I mean, that's a lot of boxing that you are clearing space off for, especially during the football season. And many of these fights are in Europe, which means they're afternoon broadcasts, which also creates a logistical issue. And, Gabe, the WBO heavyweight title is retained by Joseph Parker, 12-round decision over Huey Fury. I have not had a chance to see that. I will. But the sentiment that I'm getting is, Gabe, is this. Don't watch it.
No. It was the version I was watching was so poor quality, and the fight was of such poor quality. I was like, you know what, I'm going to wait till I can see this terrible fight more clearly. You know, it just seemed like the old-timers would say, one guy was doing little, the other guy was doing less.
Right, right. 347-215-7598. We have at least 45 minutes if we go into extra championship bonus rounds, Gabe.
817. You're live on the next round.
Hey, guys. This is Gene from Texas.
Gene,
what's up,
hook them horns.
I don't know what the fuck you mean, but okay.
Not a football fan, obviously. Okay, so what's going on, Gene?
Well, you know, I do like people getting hurt, but, you know, not CTE hurt, you know, but still.
Oh, okay. Well, what's boxing then? Okay.
What do you guys think about this? I believe in this thing called all punches are created equal. I know it doesn't resonate in the fight like Carlos Quadras, which was it dispels that thing of saying, you know, more punches landed, he wins. Because Strada won that fight. So what do you guys think about that, that all punches created equal because there's no knockdown?
I don't know if that's true in the pro game. I mean, certain, like, Paulie Malignaggi lands a right hand compared to, let's say, Junior Dorticos. Are you sure those two are really equal?
I feel you on that one.
But you're saying, like, if it's a 12-round brawl and two guys are throwing down, but there's no knockdowns, then, you know, you shouldn't score for one guy just because he's billed as a puncher.
Mm-hmm. And I
agree with that, Gabe, by the way. You judge the fight. You judge the fight.
Right.
Just judge it one round at a time. You judge it to the best of your ability. And you're right. There shouldn't be a special criteria like, well, he's a knockout puncher, but he didn't stop him. Well, guess what? You don't penalize a guy for that.
Right.
Yeah. And I also want to just ask, what do you think about YouTube getting into the boxing business?
I think it's great because it's available. It's another avenue, and more people are going online for their entertainment content. I mean, we all know about cord cutting, and YouTube is a relatively easy way of getting content and generally very reliable. I think it's a good thing, actually.
Oh, and
I think we're
going to
see more and more of it. And just like, you know, with this cruiserweight thing, like a lot of people are complaining that there's no US TV, but they're streaming the fights online. Just plug my computer into my TV and I sat and watched the fights. It was great. The presentation's fantastic. What was your next point?
Do you think any boxers ever sit for the national anthem?
Nah, honestly, I don't. And besides, a lot of the national anthems are played as they're in the locker room, so I seriously doubt it. I don't think, and for some reason, it's more of an NFL issue more than it is a boxing issue. I don't think that dynamic is even going to be broached in our sport.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
209. You're live on the next round.
Hey, guys.
209? Hello.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
It was a pretty busy weekend of fighting. I didn't get to watch the Linares fight, but I got to watch the Zerto fight, and it was pretty good. He was thumping. He was very active. That was a pretty good fight. That made a fan of me. And at the very end, I like how he said, "Viva Mexico, cabrones." I thought that was pretty funny. Oscar Valdez, yeah, man, that guy throws fire in his punches, man. I mean, he might as well have brought him back inside that ring, man. He was, they were all power shots. But for the most part, I'm going to keep this pretty quick. But that's pretty much it. That's all I have to say. I rewatched the Canelo fight, and you know what? I really didn't pick the wrong for the decision. I really needed his decision. I really needed the card. This is like the third time I watched this, and I still, even after I watched it, I was still on my feet. Come on, Canelo, get on. I mean, it was a good match. Joshua's decision. This is one of those fights where you could sit there and appreciate it even after you already watch it. That's all I have to say, gentlemen. Enjoy your week.
All right, thank you very much. 347-215-7598. If you want to call in, we have 10 minutes to go, and of course we have bonus championship rounds. Gabe?
909. You're live on the next one. 909?
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hey, how's it going? Hey, I had a quick question. I had to call in and out today's show. Back to the scoring for the Canelo Triple G fight. Is it just a lost art, or is it cheap to score rounds of tie?
You know, they generally, the commissions, they don't like even round for some reason. And I've always said, you know what, if you really believe that nobody wins a round, just call it 10-10. The problem is, and I've seen this in Britain a lot, where guys will give seven even rounds. So you have to be careful with that. So, but again, there's no rule against even rounds, but I've been told by judges as they go through these seminars and they're trained is try to stay away from even rounds, which I find to be problematic.
Yeah, because I watched just out of the random the Leonard Duran fight the other day, just, you know, killing time one day, and they were showing the scorecards on one of the YouTube videos, and there was a lot of 10-10 rounds through that fight.
Yeah, there were. There absolutely were. But generally, to me, you go even rounds when it's a feel-out round where literally nothing is happening. Now, if there's a lot of action, okay, and they don't trade knockdowns, I think your job as a professional judge is to figure out who edged it, you know?
Gotcha.
But again, I admit, it's a tough job.
Yeah, now I was just more curious because I know now boxers nowadays, especially the whole Mayweather effect, it's land three punches clean, and then, you know, I won the round. Put the round in the back type of thing, and it's just missing the excitement part of it.
Yeah. Anything else we could do for you?
No, that was it. Just kind of curious on that. All right, thanks.
Thank you very much. 347-215-7598. Phone lines are open. This is the next round with Gabe Montoya and Steve Kim.
Why not just add the 13th round? For those big fights.
The issue is, I've heard that a lot, but if you have a point deduction or a knockdown, just having an odd number of rounds does not ensure you'll never have a draw.
Sure. You know, yeah, I guess you're right. But I don't know. Like, we could have used an extra round in that fight. That's all I'm saying. At least one. Bring back 15 for the big championship fights. And, you know, if it's for all the belts, you'll really do it classic style because – Man, it just drives me crazy. 209, you're live on the next round.
Hi, guys. This is Refugio from the Central Valley.
Fuji,
hey,
what's going on?
Hey, I'm not sure if anybody's been talking about this or not, but the Triple G Canelo fight, prior to the fight leading up to it, Abel Sanchez was talking about if they got screwed by the judges, it was their fault. That they were going to go in with that mindset. They weren't going to leave it in the judge's hands. And Triple G said somewhat similar kind of comments. But then fight night came, and I didn't see too much body shots, which was another thing that they hadn't done in the Jacobs fight. Why was that? Why did they not chop him down?
That's a great question. It's been asked. I don't know what to say. He should have gone to the body more. I addressed that with Abel. At the end of the day, they probably hurt themselves by not doing it. I'll say it again. For the first time, I believe Abel Sanchez has to really look at that film and say, we need to make tweaks. This thing has been on automatic pilot with great success for 4.5-5 years. Now you got a guy that's 36. You're facing better guys. This is where Abel's got to start earning his money.
So what was the response, though, that you got from Abel? Was it like maybe a technical thing where Canelo was baiting him in to like,
well, Canelo does a very good job of leading you in the right hands, and he believed that if you watch what Golovkin did a lot of the times when Canelo's on the ropes, he wouldn't step a certain area inside the hit zone. He understood if
right.
he got a little bit closer, the right hands would come over the top, and Golovkin was pretty content to just jab to the chest or the front shoulder and just kind of corral Canelo to set up shots eventually. But you got to give Canelo credit. He's got very good upper body movement, and he's very
mm-hmm.
adept at pulling quick off the trigger. Some of this had to do with Canelo.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I understand that too, but it's just like two fights in a row where it's the same issue, and then especially the talk leading up before it, it just has me baffled and with a sour taste.
All right, well, listen, thank you for the call, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who else is on the line?
I expect Triple G to fill in those holes or try to find a way to be a little more aggressive. He's got to, I think it starts with his feet maybe, you know, more feints, maybe coming, you know, popping in and out with a movement and then punching. Because I love the way he approached Canelo on the ropes. He knew that's where Canelo felt comfortable, but he never really gave up too much.
I
think there's going to be more action in the rematch.
Gabe, I've said this, that the template that I think that Golovkin needs to follow, because you have a guy that's very good at moving his head and rolling with punches and slipping them. So what doesn't move? The shoulder, the arms, the elbows. And go back to Rocky Marciano against Roland Lestarza, where he just beat this guy's arms so badly. The guy got blood clots. So just continue to make contact and just chop the tree on the front side.
Yeah.
That would be my tact.
Yeah, because Canelo's got a nice guard, and he's got long arms. When he folds in, it is, you know, people say, well, where'd the body attack go? I just think Triple G likes to see the opening and hit it. And there wasn't a lot of opening there for the body. And what's waiting for him is, like you said, a right hand over the top or those nice uppercuts. So, you know, he played a game where I'm going to pick and pack at you and just jab at you with my ice pick jab and hope that I get something done, you know, like an opening as you try to move away. It was tactical. It cost him the fight maybe. Back to the phone lines. It's 510. You're live on the next round.
Hey, Gabe. Hey, Steve. It's Fernando from Richmond. How you guys doing?
Good. What's going on, Fernando?
Good. I didn't get through last week. I had the fight convincingly. Well, not convincingly, but yeah, I guess convincingly for a Triple G, 7-5. But I'm listening in, and maybe you guys and some of the people calling in, it seems like after they watch the replay, they're ready to hand in some bizarre Adelaide Bird card 10-2 the other way. You know?
I haven't really sensed that, to be honest with you. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I haven't gotten that sense. Have you, Gabe?
Well, I had a pretty wide scorecard for Triple G. So the night of, you know, it was like 10-2, 9-3. But I wasn't going crazy about a close fight. But I was also drinking. So if you missed last week's show, I did cop to that. But not like, you know, sloppy drunk, a couple of bourbons. But, you know, I also was enjoying the fight and kind of loosely scoring. I just don't see how you can give 7 rounds to Canelo, much less 6. I just didn't ever feel like he was in complete control of a round. Maybe he was being wily and cagey, but I don't think that's the same thing.
I definitely agree with you, Gabe. There's no way you give 7 rounds to Canelo. Even a draw with him, I thought Triple G did win, but at the same time, I'm hearing a lot of people trying to find a narrative, you know, watch it again and like kind of feed into their own narrative of Triple G winning 10-2, which is ridiculous. I mean, I don't know. Changing the subject, I know you, Steve, like to watch 30 for 30. Have you listened to the podcast? I was listening today to the story about James Scott, the guy who fought inside, like, the Fed
Oh, from
Wild, like,
Broadway. Yeah. You know what? I have not listened to any of that. I should, but, you know, I'm just waiting for the Tommy Morrison one to come out on ESPN in a few days.
What an amazing story, man. I was, like, blown. I had never heard of it. I've heard of Yaki Lopez. My uncle would always talk about him, but I had never heard of James Scott or his story. It's just amazing. It's amazing.
And some of those fights, I think, were televised by NBC. And if I'm not mistaken, our old friend Larry Merchant actually covered one of those fights from inside the state pen.
Yeah, that's what they go through. They talk about it was HBO, and they talk about Larry Merchant. And it was a fascinating. That could never happen today, man. It was amazing. It's an amazing story, man. So I recommend that to everybody. You know, it's just something really interesting. Yeah, that's about my phone call today. I appreciate you guys taking my phone call today. You guys have a good week.
Fernando, thank you very much. 347-215-7598. We continue to hit the phone line. One note here, Gabe. It was announced by Golden Boy that one of their ESPN shows coming up on October 19th was going to be Gabe Rosado against Glenn Tapia. They are playing with fire here. I'm sorry, Glenn Tapia, I would be squeamish about using him.
Dude, I don't want to see that fight. Especially because, you know, Gabe Rosado is not going to knock him out with one punch. He's going to wear him down and have to, you know, really beat on him to get him out of there. And people will say that you know, Glenn Tapia did well against Jason Quigley in his last fight. But, you know, Quigley suffered a pretty nasty injury, like his hand detached from his arm. And, you know, he fought that fight one-handed. And that's why Glenn Tapia, I think, got back into the fight. It's really dangerous. If he's passing tests to keep his license, I honestly, I think he's not taking the right test.
347-215-7598 on this Monday night here. Gabe, anyone else on the phone lines?
Yeah, but that whole card's kind of grim, though. Aren't there other guys with, like, multiple losses? Like, it's, you know, Alejandro Barrera and Keandre Gibson are going at it, and they're, you know.
You know what, that I don't mind,
one.
Though. Because, you know what, listen, those guys are just coming off losses. With Glenn Tapia,
sure.
I'm talking about a physical state. I mean, there are guys with five straight losses that I'm like, you know what, you're a tough journeyman. You make good fights, you're just matched real tough. But there's other guys you're like, oh, my God, why are you in here? Why are you licensed, you know?
Yeah. Grim. 619, you're live on the next round.
Hey, Gabe, Steve, Juan, San Diego, how are you guys doing?
Juan, welcome aboard. What's going on?
Nothing. I missed the first half of the show, but I wanted to touch on
you didn't miss much.
I didn't watch the fight Saturday, and I didn't have a lot to comment on that. But I did want to comment on the Danny Jacobs deal with Eddie Hearn. I found that very interesting, and I think that opens up new matchups, potential matchups for him. I don't know. If you guys had a little bit more on that, what happened there? Why is the PBC finally sinking, or what's going on with that?
I don't think it's sinking. I do think that an individual, in this case Danny Jacobs, saw his circumstance and said, wow, there's only a finite amount of dates on Showtime, and I don't have a dedicated promoter. And I'd like to be promoted. I have a story. I can fight. I have momentum. And I just don't want a guy that's going to put his name up on the banner and say, I'm your promoter for 2 months. That is no way to become a star.
Exactly. I feel that guy in particular is one of the most interesting guys in that, you know, in that stable. He's a good fighter, punches hard. He already proved himself against Triple G that he's one of the top guys. And he has a lot, you know, a lot to offer. I think I would make him a favorite over Canelo, over most middleweights. And I think he's a tough out for anybody out there, even for Triple G. Even in the rematch, that would be a very tough fight. So hopefully he gets to, you know, he gets to beat up Billy Joe Saunders, get a belt, and we finally may see a unified champion in the middleweight division if that, you know, that's...
Yeah, and by the way... I know I'm in the minority, and maybe I have my Louis Arias, Rock Nation, sun rose-colored glasses on. I think it's a pretty good fight. I do. I think Louis Arias can fight a little bit, and he's looking for the opportunity of his lifetime. And you know what? Let's see what the kid has.
Yeah, and also I heard that Carl Frampton also did kind of the same thing.
Yeah, he's with Frank Warren now.
Yeah, so those two things just caught my eye, and I was like, what's happening? They're starting to jump the vote, and that's interesting because there's a lot of talent that they have, like, you know, incarcerated that could, you know, potentially be fighting guys like Terrence Crawford, you know. It's frustrating.
What an interesting term you use, incarcerated, jeez.
Yeah, we have a guy like Terrence Crawford who was he tweeted that he wants to be the number one guy in the world, that he was going to do whatever it takes for him to be now that Ward and Floyd are gone. And I figured, well, this guy wants to fight all the best guys. How is he going to do that? you know, there's nobody available for him. So unless those guys start, you know, opening up, you know, I don't disagree.
And by the way, I guess Manny Pacquiao now has more delusions of grandeur that his fight with Jeff Horn should be in the Philippines, and based on that economy, that's simply not going to happen. According to Bob Arum, he told me last week, he believes that now Terrence Crawford will probably fight Jeff Horn first part of 2018.
Not that great of a matchup, if you ask me.
Certainly not one for Jeff Horn, I'll tell you that much.
That's all I have today, guys.
All right, man.
Thank you.
I wouldn't go to the Philippines if you paid me right now. It sounds like it's kind of a, just honestly, I think it might be a little of that for Bob. I mean, that's, you know, they got that crazy drug war, quote unquote, going on. 401, you're live on the next round.
Hello. Or not.
I think we just teleported into a mall.
Yeah.
Unlisted number. You're live on the next round. Unlisted number?
Bueller?
Aram, is that you?
Bueller?
I guess not. You know, slow week at the fights, slow week on the boards. Unlisted caller, two. You're live on the next round.
Ooh, we are scoring more knockdowns than Dempsey against Firpo.
Yeah, this is pretty one-sided. I think we've cleared the board at this point, kind of early.
All right, well, that's fine because I'm settling into the Arizona Cardinals and Dallas Cowboys, so that's all good with me.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
All right, well, anyway, listen, we want to thank everyone that made this show possible. On behalf of Gabriel Montoya, this is Steve Kim saying till the next round, goodbye, everybody.